One of the soldiers Abraham prowled around Manila with during those halcyon days was Arthur Houtby, a first sergeant in the 31st. Close friends and fellow non-coms who trained in the same unit, they'd done practically everything together before the war. Now they were marching out of Bataan together, side by side, keeping each other's spirits up. Sergeant Houtby started having trouble early on. The insidious combination of malaria and dysentery had sapped his strength to the point that he could no longer keep up. He faltered and weaved conspicuously. The Japanese guards eyed him with increasing annoyance. They could see that a problem was developing. Abraham was deeply worried for his friend. All along the march, they had seen what happened to those who collapsed from heat exhaustion or straggled too far behind. Sometimes a prisoner would stumble, and then get up, and then stumble again, only this time he wouldn't get up fast enough. The guards would grimace at their watches, and the tension would throb in their necks. Exasperated, they realized that they held the solution to their problem in their hands. In some cases, the guards took relative pity and gave the malingerer a beating about the head with a rifle butt, leaving him alive but often unconscious for his compatriots to carry in makeshift litters fashioned from blankets slung over bamboo poles. In other cases, however, the guards exploded with rage and came in with bayonets flashing. Regarding bullets as precious commodities, the Japanese were adroit with their bayonets. They practiced their skills zealously. Usually they would go for the abdomen. The guard would drive his blade in deep and give it a jagged twist, twist, twist in the shape of a Z to scramble the bowels. The victim's legs would kick in nervous spasms. Stepping on the dying man's sternum, the guard would remove the blade with a flourish. He would spend a few minutes wiping his blade clean with a handkerchief. Japanese soldiers were expected to keep their bayonets immaculate. The guard would then give an impatient gesture, and the column would move on, leaving the dead straggler behind. After the first instance of this, the unspoken rule became clear. Those who could not keep pace were dead men. As Abraham marched, he saw scores of American and Filipino bodies that had been dispatched in this fashion and left to rot on the side of the road. Abraham took Houtby's right arm and draped it over his shoulders, and the two walked arm in arm. This worked for an hour or so, but Houtby was growing steadily weaker.
"Let me lie down," Houtby said. "My legs are heavy."
"They'll kill you," Abraham said. "You want that?"
Another American stepped up and took Houtby's left arm, and they began to walk as a wobbling triumvirate, with Houtby's legs miming the stride, but not actually contributing to the forward progress. The guard did not seem to mind that Houtby was being helped, so long as the pace was not affected. For Abraham, it was a strange and dreadful feeling to know that he literally held Houtby's life in his arms.
"Death was with us every step," Abraham said, "watching us like a buzzard."
What Houtby most desperately needed, of course, was a drink of water, but his canteen was empty, and the schedule-obsessed guard had no intention of stopping. Later in the afternoon, however, there was a changing of the guards. Almost immediately, Abraham could sense that the new soldier responsible for this group was kinder and more sympathetic. He did not raise his voice. He slowed the pace a little. To Abraham's amazement, he gave one obviously struggling prisoner a bar of candy and a commiserating pat on the shoulder. After a while, they came to a rivulet that was almost dried up. In the center of the stream was a deep pool, brimming with dark, stagnant water, an old carabao wallow. A layer of green foam floated on the surface, and bluebottle flies swarmed in thick clouds.
"Even so," said Abraham, "it was water."
Abraham consulted the guard for approval. Although obviously skeptical about the hygiene, he understood the men's predicament and readily nodded his consent. Abraham helped Houtby over to the wallow. They knelt down and raked the scum back with their hands. Then they immersed their faces in the tannin-dark liquid and drank like wild animals at a watering hole.
"The water tasted as if it was sent from heaven," Abraham recalled. When we started down the road again, somehow we felt better, even though we knew that those of us who didn't have dysentery already were sure to get it now.